Fasten your seatbelt and turn up the radio. We're going on a road trip. I'm Glenn Moberg, our guest on Route 51 today, City Pages music critic Dino Corvino, guitarist and Wausau marketing executive Tom Neal, and Tom Jordan of the critically acclaimed blues rock band Mean Tooth Grin.
Chopping them down with my Tommy gun.
You're listening to the song Tommy Gun by the Wisconsin blues rock band Mean Tooth Grin, whose leader Tom Jordan joins us by telephone. In our studio, Dino Corvino, music critic with City Pages of Wausau, and Tom Neal, a guitarist and marketing executive. We are here to discuss the phenomenon of white supremacist or hate metal music in the wake of the mass shootings at the Sikh temple in Oak Creek, shootings perpetrated by a man named Wade Michael Page, who was involved in the white supremacist movement and who led his own hate metal band, a group called End Apathy, and who played for other groups, including one called Definite Hate, whose music is still on the internet. We want to explore this dangerous fringe offshoot of the rock and roll scene, see what the boundaries are. Where do you draw the line between music with provocative, even offensive lyrics and music that inspires hate? And to do this, we're going to get the perspective of people who love rock music and who make their living by it. A warning to our listeners, we are going to be playing music clips on the show. A few of them will offend just about all of you. Others will offend a few of you. But there's no other way to do this program than to actually listen to the music clips that we will be discussing. So thanks to all of you for being with us today, Dino and Tom here in the studio.
You bet. Thank you.
You bet. Thanks.
And Tom Jordan, you're joining us by telephone on the road. Tell us a little bit about Mean Tooth Grin. You've been critically acclaimed as a band. You've got a big following. And as I said, you're on the road this afternoon.
Yep. Glad to be here, Glenn.
Tell us a little bit about the group, Tom.
My group?
Your group. You bet.
Three guys that got together one day and decided that we wanted to make some music and have some fun doing it, I guess.
You put out some CDs. The sound is very intense, but I think it's accessible to a lot of people. You've got a big following, and you're playing a lot.
Yeah, we're staying pretty busy. The people have been really really open to the kind of music that we're playing, so it's been nice. It's been different than any other band I've had, where you think you're doing something cool and you find out exactly what people think about it after a while. So it's been a real blessing being in a band like this, where I can kind of exercise some creativity and people, seem to dig it.
Well, Tom, your band plays loud. Your music is heavy. You've got skulls on your website. That's an icon that's not uncommon in the metal music scene. But yet what you do is a far cry from what these fringe white supremacist bands do. In fact, as a blues rock band, some of your biggest influences are black musicians.
Very true. Very true. I think, you've always had musicians over the years who have kind of, tested the boundaries of music with speaking on, some somewhat controversial topics. Johnny Cash, back in the day said, shot a man in Reno just to watch him die. And, at the time.
And he did the song Cocaine Blues, too.
Yeah. There were some topics that at the time may have been, somewhat taboo, but they're also very real. And, I think realism is something that people can identify with in music. And unfortunately, one of the aspects of life is, life and death. And depending on its context used in music, it can be, used in a good way or a bad way.
Well, what did you think when the media started making a big deal of this shooting suspect, Wade Page, playing in a hate metal band?
Well, the media always tries to point towards different things, music, violent video games, did he watch, violence on TV, those sort of things. And I think they're feeding that thirst that people have for the why. You know, people always want to know why. And, you know, I personally, you know, I think that music is probably about as much to blame as, you know, the car he drove. You know, I definitely think that there's a much deeper problem with him, and it certainly wasn't related to the kind of music he was listening to or playing. I think his attitude may have came out in the style of music that he was playing, but I don't think that music itself was at fault in any way.
And Tom Neal, you're a guitarist and a rock mm-hmm. music fan. What was your reaction when you saw those news reports on Monday morning?
I put maybe a little bit more value into the idea that this particular vein of music that they've been that band was using is something that's being used as a tool, effectively almost a recruitment or a rallying cry kind of thing within that white supremacist movement. And you know, any kind of music can be. Am I not coming through?
No, okay. You're doing fine,
right.
Tom.
Any kind of music can be used by any movement as a rallying, you know, tool.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems to be being used quite broadly within this, you know, segment of society that we're talking about. You know, the more you look into it and read about it, it's not uncommon at all to see that, there are gatherings, you know, of white supremacists, and it's all around, the idea of a festival, and there's music and there's bands and that sort of thing. Now, it's not always heavy metal, you know, there can be country music. There
right.
There can be pop music with a really, bad, content, you know. So it's not strictly a heavy metal thing, but it's very common within this segment.
Dino Corvino, your reaction when you saw the news reports on Monday morning?
On Monday, I really wasn't all that focused on the fact that he was in a metal band. I was really focused on the fact that a sick man shot some people over the weekend. As a music lover and a professional and a bit of a rabble rouser, I didn't really want to tie into that because I'm not willing to sort of give up that connection. I don't think that this is anything more than a sick guy who shot a gun at some people. And the choice of his musical band is irrelevant. And I think that we can hang the hat on him however we'd like as a culture. But I don't think that one thing caused the other. And I don't think that I think that any attempt to sort of distract from the fact that a violent man picked up a gun and shot strangers is a distraction of the fact that a violent man picked up a gun and shot strangers.
Well, gentlemen, earlier today I talked to Heidi Byrick. She's the Intelligence Project Director with the Southern Poverty Law Center, which tracks hate crimes and has also been tracking Wade Michael Page and the skinhead music scene. The interview is about 8.5 minutes long. It clearly defines the scene that Page was involved in. So let's listen to it, and we'll talk when we come out on the other side.
Poverty Law Center has been tracking Wade Michael Page since 2000 when he attempted to purchase some materials, we're not sure what, from the Neo-Nazi National Alliance. And, you know, we have been long very interested in anybody who is trying to contact the National Alliance because its leader wrote the novel that Timothy McVeigh followed in his Oklahoma City bombing. So the organization is intimately connected with violence.
That's the Turner Diaries?
That's right, the Turner Diaries, which is a fantasy race war novel. It's really quite scary. So in 2000, he was trying to connect with them. And then over the course of the next several years, he attended hate music events that we track, like Hammerfest. He went to one of his first ever in 2000. By the early part of the 2000s, he was playing for some prominent hate music bands like Definite Hate. And then in 2005, he founded his own hate music band, End Apathy, and continued to take that band on the hate circuit in the United States, playing several venues a year.
What can you tell us about those groups that he was involved with?
Well, I've already talked about the National Alliance and its history of violence.
Well, I'm talking about the music groups specifically.
Yeah, sure, the music groups. Definite Hate is one of the more popular hate bands out there. It's closely connected to the Hammerskins, of which Wade Page was actually a member. We've been able to document that he was patched into the Hammerskins, which is one of the scariest skinhead outfits in the country just a few years ago. And then End to Apathy was a less well-known band than Definite Hate or some others like Max Resist, for example. But it had played some prominent venues in 2011. And really, the music that these bands produce is all very similar. It's loud, sort of hardcore guitar. And the lyrics are really violent, often about killing Jews or minorities, pay-ons to Hitler, that kind of thing.
Definite Hate had a picture on the internet of a black man being hit hard by a white fist with the black man's eye flying out of its socket. Is this kind of gruesome imagery typical for the hate rock scene?
That is exactly the kind of imagery you find on album covers and T-shirts. You have, you know, black men hanging from nooses, for example. The band End Apathy that Paige founded has an album cover showing a police car on fire. It's really graphic racial violence that tends to show up in their propaganda materials.
His record label, known as Label 56, from Lincecum, Maryland, is it true that as recently as last week they were still selling merchandise for End Apathy and Definite Hate? And how big of a player are they?
Yeah, Label 56 is run by a member of the Maryland State Skinheads, and it's a pretty important distributor of racist and, you know, anti-Semitic music. Yeah, they didn't abandon End Apathy or Definite Hate until after the shootings on Sunday. Late the following day, they put up sort of a disclaimer vis-a-vis the shootings and tried to distance themselves from the from what happened there. But this is this label is very important in furthering hate music in the United States.
Are there any retail stores selling this kind of stuff with those kinds of graphic racist images, those kinds of lyrics?
You don't really find them in retail stores. Now, I'm not saying that it might be not someplace, maybe under a counter somewhere, but for the most part, the way this stuff is distributed is by labels that specialize in hate music off of internet sites. That's the way it's done nowadays.
We've got a statement from Label 56, which did take the End Apathy material off of its website, and this is a quote. Label 56 is very sorry to hear about the tragedy in Wisconsin, and our thoughts are with the families and friends of those who are affected. We have worked hard over the years to promote a positive image and have posted many articles encouraging people to take a positive path in life. We have never sought attention by using shock value, symbols, and ideology that are generally labeled as such. Is that believable?
No, that is not believable. If you listen to the music that's found, the kind of stuff that they're selling, it's filled with graphic images of violence against minorities, against Jews and whatnot. I don't know if that was really a heartfelt statement or simply an attempt to not have law enforcement come down on Label 56, but given their history of selling hate materials, it's a little idiotic.
Where does this white supremacist rock get played? Where do the live performances take place?
Yeah, the music, for the most part, the live performances are held on private property. This is not the kind of thing that you're going to find in some local bar in a community. I mean, it's rare that it's put on in mainstream venues, and the few times that I know of that it has, it's usually a fluke on the part of the bar owners. What you have is Hammerfest is usually held on private property, you know, some kind of compound owned by a hate group, and you don't really know about the event unless you know people in the movement have been sort of personally invited when they'll give you the coordinates of where you're supposed to show up.
Where is Hammerfest performed, and what is it, and how long has it been going on?
Yeah, it's performed in different venues across the country. They move it around. The one I was thinking of is a piece of property owned by a guy who owns sort of a private bar. I think that's the best way to describe it, and a guy who's made racist statements in the past. He's got some property south of Atlanta, and he allowed Hammerfest to be held there before, especially in 2000 when Wade Page was there. But it's held in different places. And other groups like Volksfront, which has property in Missouri, will put on these kinds of events, invite the bands in on their private property.
Most of these groups are really fringe. They don't record for mainstream labels. They're not at record stores. They don't play concerts at rock music venues. So I guess the question is, how important is this white supremacist rock music?
Well, I mean, if you compare it to sort of the sales of all the rest of the mainstream music, it's not that important. It is important, however, for propaganda, hate propaganda, and for recruiting in terms of the white supremacist movement. We've talked to a lot of skinheads over the years who've left the movement and say, what really drew me in was the music. It was exciting. I'd go to these events. I'd be in the mosh pit. I'd be drunk. I'd be having a good time. It's where I met my sort of white brothers. I got inculcated in the movement. I mean, that's its importance. In terms of money, we know that Interpol in the late 1990s said that hate music and associated paraphernalia like T-shirts and whatnot was about the equivalent in Europe and the United States in terms of money as the hashish trade. So it brings in a considerable amount of money, but it's nothing like a Madonna or something like that, you know.
Rock music is based on rebellion by nature, Heidi. It's loud, it's abrasive, it challenges authority. And with many metal and punk bands, the lyrics are pointedly angry. If I could just point out some examples, there are punk bands dating back to the 70s, like the Sex Pistols and the Clash, hard rockers like AC/DC and Black Sabbath, and then you've got death metal bands, a genre which began in the 80s with groups like Slayer and Venom, and then there are hardcore groups like Deicide and Cannibal Corpse, which draws an audience when they play. Is there a continuum here? Where do you draw the line between punk, death metal, heavy metal, and these white supremacist hate bands, and is there some overlap? Do they attract some of the same people?
We don't. You know, the music may attract some of the same people, and I know that some ex-skins that we've talked to have said they started sometimes in death metal circles or in punk circles and then made their way into white supremacist movement, but the lyrics are so markedly different, even if the music might sound sometimes the same, you know, this kind of like really hardcore guitar music, but the lyrics are so different and the message is so different that I can't think of it as a continuum. I mean, it's sort of a leap off a bridge when you join up with the white power music scene.
Did it surprise those of you who've been tracking hate groups that this shooting happened in Oak Creek and that the perpetrator was involved in a white supremacist metal band?
It wasn't surprising that this was somebody who was this deep in the skinhead movement. I mean, there's a lot of violence associated with this movement in terms of hate crimes and whatnot. The National Alliance that Wade Page tried to contact has turned out tons of murderers, white supremacist terrorists, and a guy who was connected with the National Alliance just about a year and a half ago tried to bomb a Martin Luther King Day parade in Spokane, Washington that would have killed hundreds. So sadly, no, we weren't surprised.
Heidi, thank you so much, and thank you for the good work that you do.
Oh, thanks a lot. Thanks for having me.
That's Heidi Byrick, the Intelligence Project Director with the Southern Poverty Law Center, which has been tracking shooting suspect Wade Michael Page and the hate metal music scene that he was involved in. I'm Glenn Moberg. Our guests on today's show, Tom Jordan of the band Mean Tooth Grin, music critic Dino Corvino, and guitarist Tom Neal. We'll be back to talk about hate metal music and get the reaction to what Heidi just said. From the perspective of rock music fans, we also want to hear from you, 1-800-780-9742. If you'd like to join the conversation, that's 1-800-780-9742. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio on the Ideas Network.
Support for WPR comes from Northwind Renewable Energy in Stevens Point, partnering with agricultural and commercial industries to invest in central Wisconsin's renewable energy future. More about the benefits of solar for business at northwindre.com.
I'm Glenn Moberg. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio on the Ideas Network. 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. If you'd like to join my guests, Tom Jordan of the group Mean Tooth Grin, Dino Corvino, he's the music critic with City Pages, and Tom Neal, a guitarist and marketing executive from Wausau. The subject today is hate metal music. Let's get your reaction to what Heidi Byrick of the Southern Poverty Law Center just said. Tom Jordan, let's start with you.
I agree with most of what she said. I definitely think that for people that are, in those circles, music is always a good way to relate to anybody. I mean, for me, in the early 80s, the punk scene, guys that listen to Black Flag or whatever, I found myself identifying with them more. And I think when you have that, there's sort of a camaraderie that happens because of the music that you like. I think it's been like that, you know, always. You know, you'll find that one person that you identify with about music, and you finally have something to talk about. And it's unfortunate that that music is being used in a way like this to sort of breed hate and you know, this kind of thing, because music should be inspiring, you know, the opposite, like creativity and appreciation for, you know, life and other sort of things like that. So I think it's unfortunate that music is being used like that.
Well, Tom Neal, jump off of that point, Tom Jordan just said, you know, you identify with the bands and mm-hmm. you join like folks who listen to the music. You and I grew up in the 60s.
Sure.
And at that point in time, rock and roll and progressive political values went hand in hand. So
right.
You've seen quite a change.
Right. I mean, there was it did serve as sort of a banner under which you know, came together as a somewhat of a movement. The movement, you know, was, you know, at that time, you know, it was related to the war and related to civil rights and things like that. It was very refreshing and wonderful to have that, you know, kind of art form that supported, you know, sort of lifestyle and you know, thoughts about society and things.
And Dino Corvino, your reaction to what Tom just said and what Heidi said?
I my reaction would be is that banner exists for them too. Not I in no way want to defend hate metal here, mm-hmm. but for every time that we say that this music created a community, Tom and I are of the same age and of the same musical lineage. So this music created, Black Flag specifically created a community for us. But at the same time, this music creates a community for them. And we as a culture have to acknowledge that the problem isn't so, in my opinion, the problem isn't so much the music. The problem is so much that there's a piece of our culture that feels a need to exist within that community.
Right.
So there, regardless of, it could be any sort of music. It could be Bing Crosby. These young men are going to identify with each other because they want to identify with racial music. I bet you there would be as many people who find the embrace of the skinhead culture as reject the skinhead culture. So at the moment of experiencing a barn dance with Swerve Driver or whatever the agnostic front band they want to claim is, the individual has a choice to stand there and choose this embrace or to walk away.
Well, the Killers band, End Apathy, has been taken down off the internet, but one of the bands he played with, Definite Hate, is still online. I'm going to play one short clip and only one short clip of their music. It's about a minute long, so we know what we're talking about. And this is a warning to our Wisconsin Public Radio listeners. The clip has some offensive, racist, and violent imagery. It's a song titled Welcome to the South, and it glorifies lynching and cross-burning. This is the group Definite Hate that Wade Page played with at least one time over the past 10 years.
Welcome to the South. You can see a black flag and see the cross burn in the dead of the night. I got no mercy for the weak, and we're not gonna stop until our people are back on top. Welcome to the South. The hospitality town, and the world is gonna know what we're all about. The rebel yell, I shouted out loud in our pride. There is no doubt. Welcome to the South. Welcome to the South!
It's a group, Definite Hate, that Killer Wade Page played with at one time or another. I looked at the stuff on the internet, and that was one of the pieces that I actually could play on the radio. Gentlemen, in America, it's not legal or constitutional to censor even the most offensive, bigoted remarks, right, unlike in some European countries. How do you respond to people who say this stuff is so dangerous that it should be censored?
Well, I listened to that we just heard, and you know, frankly, listening to the lyrics, it could just as well be taken as being ironic. It could have been somebody who's anti-hate music, and what they're doing is characterizing something that they don't, you know, condone, right? I mean, we've seen that all through the history of music. Somebody will play the character of a bad person and a bad viewpoint to show how bad it is. All right. So, I mean, it's really, you know, like to maybe to Dino's point, it's not so much the music or the words here as it is who's singing them, you know, and what their real agenda might be aside from that tune.
Yeah, Tom Jordan, as a musician, you must be opposed to censorship.
Yeah, I am. Unfortunately, there, you know, everybody has a right to say what they want and do that sort of thing. It's unfortunate that some people need to use it in a hateful way. But, you know, there is always the argument, if you don't like it, don't listen to it, you know. So, I mean, we have that freedom, too, so.
Dino Corvino, to me, it was hard to stomach the image of cross burning and bodies hanging from trees.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I think that, you know, the imagery is bad. I think it's a crappy song. Oops, sorry. But I mean, I don't think the song is very good. I don't think it's very well recorded. I don't think it's very well written. I don't think it's very well played.
That's probably one of the least offensive things people are going to hear on the radio today,
yeah.
Dino. So it's,
but,
I mean,
without the context of that, of knowing who sang that, I don't know how that's too much different than Ted Nugent.
Well, let's examine this idea of where you draw the line between hate rock music and punk bands with offensive, even violent lyrics. We're going to listen to a montage of three punk bands from the 70s, some of whose music was actually celebrated in liberal progressive circles. You'll be hearing this hit single by the Sex Pistols' God Save the Queen, the hit single from 1977 by the Clash called White Riot, and a piece by the group Black Flag called White Minority. And again, a warning to our listeners, some of you will probably find this music offensive. It's the group Black Flag, The Clash, and the Sex Pistols, bands that are usually not included in this genre of hate metal music. And here are the lyrics to The Clash's White Riot, for those who had trouble making them out. Black people got a lot of problems, but they don't mind throwing a brick. White people go to school where they teach you how to be thick. White Riot, I want a riot. White Riot, a riot of my own. Dino Corvino?
I'm a huge fan of The Clash, and I'm a huge fan of that song, and the context of that song is infinitely important. Otherwise, that song taken out of context is going to sound bad. I mean, the founders of The Clash were involved as witnesses and participants in a riot in England with young African-American folks in poverty, and they simply said the song was a call to white kids to rise up because they were in poverty as well. So the disenfranchised in England at the time, they were simply calling for white kids to be as involved as African-American or African kids in England at the time.
Well, how do you respond to people who say the music clips that I just played constitute hate music?
I find that to be absurd.
Yeah, I don't get that either.
Tom Jordan? Because you'll hear that from some people.
I have to agree with Dino. I grew up listening to a lot of that stuff, and particularly Black Flag. I actually have a Black Flag tattoo still on my body to this day. some of that stuff, Dino's right. Some of it, taken out of context, might sound bad, but I know for a fact. I mean, Black Flag. Henry Rollins was a member of that band. He's like the most anti-racist person on the planet. He's very, 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 like, really, really not racist.
And, right. And just to be clear, that the singer of that Black Flag song is a Hispanic American.
Yes.
Dino Corvino of City Pages, Tom Neal, a guitarist and marketing executive, and Tom Jordan of the group Mean Tooth Grin. We're talking about hate metal music, and we'd like to hear from you, 1-800-780-9742. I'm Glenn Mobrig. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio on the Ideas Network.
Support for Wisconsin Public Radio comes from UMR, a United Healthcare company providing employee benefits administration, integrated health management, and pharmacy benefits administration for self-funded employers throughout the U.S. More about UMR at umr.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, the band Mean Tooth Grin, led by one of our guests, Tom Jordan, doing the Reverend Gary Davis song, John the Revelator.
Well, tell me, who's it writing? John the Revelator, tell me, who's it writing? John the Revelator, who's it writing? John the Revelator wrote the book on the seven seas.
Jordan, what inspired you to record that song?
I've just always been a big fan of Delta and Hill Country Blues, and that's one that's always stuck out to me. I heard early versions of Sun House doing it and Lead Belly, and it was just always one that kind of grabbed me and had kind of a, I don't know, an emotional thing going on in it that, you know, a lot of that music had, but that one just kind of, something spoke to me a little more on that one, so
well,
we decided one day we would do it.
And this music, it has a very strong Christian influence, obviously, a song about the Book of Revelations.
Yeah, well, a lot of old blues music has a lot of very religious elements, and what people sometimes forget is that you can't have, you know, God without the devil, so a lot of the music, you know, having religious elements, there would be talk of the devil, you know, or bad behavior and a repentant attitude later. You know, there was always kind of a yin to the yang with that music. You know, there would be the repentant attitude singing about church, and then there would be the song about drinking, you know, and sin. And
well, it's like the dichotomy of gospel music and the blues, so God's music and the devil's music, and you put them side by side, and they sound an awfully lot alike sometimes.
Well, yeah, and it's very honest, too, because it's not one guy just telling you about when he's feeling good. You know, he's telling you about when he's feeling good. He's telling you about when he's feeling bad. He's telling you when he does something good and when he does something evil, you know. And a lot of that music also had, you know, guys like, R.L. Burnside would sing songs about murder and God, the devil, you know, very, very real things for those guys, things that they had actually been through.
Does it strike you as being ironic that the skinhead rockers that we're talking about, people who hate black people, are nonetheless playing music, heavily amplified guitars, pentatonic scales that draws its roots from black music, from the blues?
Well, I think pretty much all music nowadays has been influenced in one way or another by blues, whether it be metal, hard rock, country. I mean, it all kind of, you know, comes from the same spot. So, yeah, I've often thought about that too, that it's just kind of ironic. But, you know, I think a lot of our people who are hateful and, you know, don't know any better are that way because of a lack of intelligence. You know, they may be smart in their circles or whatever, but obviously
they don't see the big picture.
More intelligent people are very, very more understanding. At least I view it that way.
Well, I'm gonna play another medley of music clips since we're talking about God and the devil. That again, some of our listeners will find offensive. We're going to hear two death metal bands, Slayer doing a song called Death's Head, a piece by a self-professed satanic rock band named Deicide doing what I find to be an absolutely repulsive piece, if I can make an editorial comment, called Kill the Christians. And then we'll hear satanic messages from mainstream rockers AC/DC and the Rolling Stones, again with the question, where do you draw the line? Gentlemen, as somebody who grew up in the 60s, I find those first two clips very hard to listen to.
Right.
But, boy, Sympathy for the Devil by the Rolling Stones, I grew up on that. I considered it brilliant. I still consider it brilliant. Tom
right.
Neill.
Well, you know, I guess you try to be a discerning consumer and trying to understand, you know, where are they coming from? You know, what are they trying to say? And is it, you know, meant to be a sort of a protest tune, or, you know, turning around like an anti-hero and shining the light on them and showing them to be an anti-hero? Or, you know, are they, you know, singing the praises of that anti-hero, you know? And you have to make that determination yourself if you're going to be a music listener. You know, you have to try and figure out, you know, what are they trying to say to me here?
And sometimes it's not always easy to see the irony.
Right.
Dino Corvino, I've been following your riffs on Facebook with our friend Tom Neal here, who loved the music scene in the 60s, but has some problems with what's going on with metal concerts. Is there a double standard there?
Tremendously. Oh, yeah, there's a tremendous double standard. It is a overt double standard. I think that the idea that we're going to somehow attribute noble intentions to the Rolling Stones, who most of them were junkies and bombed out of their mind when they wrote that, is absurd.
Well, the Altamont Music Festival was not exactly a plateau of peace and love and understanding.
I agree. Yes, it wasn't. But at the same time, the sort of elevation of the past by my friend Tom is missing the fact that at the time, your parents hated it the same way your parents had the same reaction to the Rolling Stones that you just had to Slayer.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not a metal fan in any way, but the fact is, Slayer has an army of rabid fans. And
all right, how rabid are they?
Slayer fans are terrified.
Well, does the heavy metal scene draw a dangerous, hate-filled right-wing crowd? Are they that rabid?
Did you ask Tom or me?
Well, I think you were asking.
Let's start
Dino.
With Tom Neal, and then I'll get your response.
I have to claim ignorance on that. You know, having not been to one of their shows, I can't really characterize, you know, who shows up.
I've seen Slayer live a couple of times, and it is a fascinating, intense subculture of young people who feel connected to that music. You know, the second band that you played, I have no idea. He could have been singing A Recipe to Cake for all I know. I have no idea what he was saying.
Right. I looked up the lyrics, and yeah. They're really offensive. It's about killing Christians, but I made sure there were none of the words in there that I couldn't put on the radio.
Exactly. So I think that these bands are going to connect to the community that they connect to. I mean, Slayer is classified as one of the big four with Metallica, Anthrax, and Megadeth. They're a million selling band, and they're considered influential in their genre. And so I think that, you know, to diminish them because it doesn't connect to sort of your historic view of music, I think that that's a mistake.
Well, Ted Nugent played at the Wisconsin Valley Fair a couple of years ago. He waved an automatic rifle on the stage and then said some things that some people viewed as hate speech directed at President Obama and Secretary of State Hillary Clinton. Right. Yet he drew an overflow crowd to that event. Do we have problems with Ted Nugent?
No. Sure, politically, I'm not a big fan of Ted, but, you know, musically, I'm a huge fan of Ted. His music now is just god awful because he can't stop singing about guns and hunting. But, you know, his music in the 70s, when I was 12 years old, there was nothing cool. There was nothing cooler than Wang Dang Sweet Poon Tang, and I had no idea what that was about. But I knew
that. Hopefully, our listeners don't know what it's about, too. Tom Jordan, does it make good business sense to mix your politics with your music the way someone like Ted Nugent does, or let's say people on the left like John Mellencamp and Bruce Springsteen?
I think it really depends on who you are, but I, as a musician, am a fan of do what you're there to do, play your music, do what you exist to do, and that is to play your music, make your fans happy. Some would argue that you're in a position where you can sway people to agree with you because of where you are and that you should use that to, you know, push what you feel is right. So it's hard for me to say. Me personally, I try to stay away from it because I feel like my first job as an entertainer is to do my job and do that, you know.
Tom Jordan of the band Mean Tooth Grin, Tom Neal, guitarist and marketing executive, and we have Dino Corvino, music critic with City Pages. We're talking about Hate Metal Music. I'm Glenn Moberg. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio on the Ideas Network.
Support for WPR comes from Rely Local Wausau, working to build the local economy and strengthen the community by making local business everybody's business. Learn more about locally owned and operated businesses at relylocal.com.
I'm Glenn Moberg. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio. I've got Tom Jordan of Mean Tooth Grin, music critic Dino Corvino, and rock music fan Tom Neal. Gentlemen, we've got one last set of clips to play showing a history of violent rhetoric in our popular music. We're going to start with an old blues song by Louisiana Red called Sweet Blood Call. Then we'll hear a clip by the very influential Howlin' Wolf singing about his .44-caliber gun. Then a clip called Cop Killer by Ice-T that was roundly denounced as hate speech and a call to violence. And finally, Bobby Darin doing a musical salute to a serial killer.
I have a hard time missing you, baby, with my pistol in your mouth. Have a hard time missing you, baby, with my pistol in your mouth.
I wore my 44 so long, I made my shoulder so long. I wore my 44 so long.
Sunday morning, lies a body just oozing life. And someone sneaking round the corner. Could that someone be Mac the Knife?
Bobby Darin with the musical salute to a serial killer. So is he guilty of hate music?
It sounds like, you know, storytelling to me, you know.
Tom Jordan, your reaction to that mix of music that I just played?
I think it's important to realize what's a gimmick, what's a rock and roll gimmick, and what is not. And like Iron Maiden, you know, had the song Number of the Beast, and I remember my mom flipped out about it. Oh, it's horrible, it's horrible. And Iron Maiden is clearly not a satanic band, but they would use, you know, images of evil and stuff to sell their music.
I hear you. I want to. We've got a caller on the line, and I want to get to him, and we're running out of time here. So, Charles in Wausau, if you could make your point very quickly, you're on Route 51.
Sure. I just want to ask if any of you have seen the photographs of water crystals by the scientist Masaru Emoto, who has photographed crystallizing water while playing different kinds of music to it. It really reflects on our emotional state when we listen to different kinds of music. I just wonder if you're familiar with that body of photographs.
I'm not familiar, but I'll look into it. Why do you think it's significant, Charles?
Yeah. What's that?
Why do you think it's significant?
I love music. I think music is a little bit like nutrition. You know, you say you are what you eat, and I think sometimes your emotional state is deeply affected by what you feed it. What you feed your intellect and what you feed your ears sometimes. And so there's no question that that what you're listening to can change your state of mind. And in some ways, and this guy says really on a molecular level, this scientist Masaru Emoto says that on a molecular level, what we listen to affects our body chemistry and our entire well-being.
All right, Charles, we got to leave it at that because I'm completely out of time. Tom Jordan, what's next for Mean Tooth Grin?
Lots of shows. That's about it.
Gentlemen, it's been an interesting show. I want to thank all of you for your contributions. Tom Jordan of Mean Tooth Grin, Tom Neal guitar player, rock fan, marketing executive, and Dino Corvino, music critic of City Pages. And as Elvis Costello said, whatever happened to peace, love, and understanding? I'm Glenn Moberg. Thanks to our executive producer, Rick Ryer, our on-air producers, Jane Ritger and Crystal Waters. Special music selections by the Sex Pistols, The Clash, Black Flag, Slayer, Deicide, AC/DC, The Rolling Stones, Louisiana Red, Howlin' Wolf, Ice-T, Bobby Darin, and Mean Tooth Grin. Thanks for riding along with us this afternoon. Forward, as we say in Wisconsin. And until next week, we are heading out of town.